to transmission routers.
Hello and welcome to Queer Ear. I'm Rory Boyle and you're listening to the Transmission Roundhouse podcast that shines a light and sometimes throws a little shade on issues that don't get enough mainstream media attention. On each episode of Queer Ear, we like to leave no stone unturned and no wig unsnatched by quenching the never-ending thirst of our nearest and queerest. So on this episode, we're spilling the LGBT on the apparent decline of cruising. Now, in the last 20 years or so, our community has seen a huge number of changes in the way we interact with each other, especially when it comes to hooking up. On previous episodes, we've looked at some of the issues around nightlife and the rise of the apps, which have brought some uncomfortable truths of the dating and hookup landscape to the surface. But the reality is that nowadays, a huge amount of our connection does come from online spaces, and this, of course, has been exacerbated by COVID-19. And while a lot of us have grown accustomed to engaging this way, it wasn't so long ago that cruising was seen as a queer rite of passage. Now, when I say cruising, I am, of course, talking about the search for a sexual partner, usually of the anonymous or casual variety in an outdoor space, as opposed to the type of cruising you might see on a boat to the Maldives filled with OAPs. I mean, we do sometimes see these two worlds colliding, with companies like Atlantis offering queer men-only cruises that promise a 24/7 hedonistic party, though I did once hear the jacuzzi on one of Atlantis's ships being described as egg drop soup. I think I'll leave that to your imagination and refrain from partaking for now. Moving swiftly on though, cruising is something we've seen reign supreme throughout the history of queer culture, and while it's often been sneered and jeered at by the judgmental straights, it's worth noting that at a time when homosexuality was illegal in most parts of the Western world, and it was dangerous to be out as queer pretty much anywhere, cruising was seen as a necessity. So flash forward to the present day and you'd be hard-pressed to find a 20-something-year-old queer person who hasn't had a dating or hookup app on their phone at some point. But if you ask these same queer people about whether they'd gone cruising or not, I imagine the answer for most would be no. So why has cruising seen such a rapid decline in recent years? And are future generations missing out on what was once the easiest way to meet other queer people and form either momentary or sometimes everlasting bonds? To answer these questions, we'll be hearing from two queer men who've written about their experiences of cruising for Vice. Later in the episode, I'll be chatting to Jeff Lavelle, a queer writer who has lived in New York, LA, and Berlin, and has written fondly about his experiences of cruising in these cities and what he feels our community is now missing out on. But before that, we'll get the thoughts of James Gregg, a British journalist who wrote about his experiences of This Is My Culture, an annual party held on Hampstead Heath, honouring the life of George Michael and the sexual freedom celebrated in some of his music. I think Jeff and James's perspectives can add real value to this conversation because while they've both shared intimate feelings and views on cruising, they're both from very different places and generations, which is key to getting to the bottom of cruising's decline. But going back to George Michael for a second, well, he's probably the most widely recognised example of somebody who was publicly shamed for cruising, effectively being outed by the press in April 1998 after being arrested for engaging in a quote-unquote lewd act in a public toilet in Will Rogers Memorial Park in Beverly Hills. This incident is what made George come out. Rumours had been swirling around about his sexuality for years, but he'd actually never publicly declared that he was gay. In a defiant and unapologetic career move, 6 months after his arrest, George released a song called Outside. It contained lyrics about wanting an alfresco sex life, and its music video featured George dressed as a member of the LAPD in a restroom turned into a retro disco. This was definitely the first time I saw cruising depicted in the mainstream media, and while I didn't quite understand what it was or what George was trying to say, I now see it as the ultimate fuck you, with George completely rejecting the faux public outcry and leaning into and owning his queerness. I would also argue that while we see female singers constantly having to defend the right to express their sexuality how they see fit, this was the first time I'd seen such a thing from a male pop star. So, like me, James Gregg was just a kid at the time of George's arrest. But nearly 25 years on from the release of Outside, and a few years on from George's tragic death, I wanted to start by asking James how he feels about this incident now, looking back.
George Michael is probably the first time that I was sort of aware of the concept of cruising. The press tried so hard to shame George Michael, rather than having his comeback be some sort of weepy, apologetic, chatty appearance, disavowing his behaviour to come out and like make this thing which just like really sort of celebrates it in this like really tongue-in-cheek way, rejection of shame. I remember just being really sort of taken by the audacity of it and just finding that incredibly worthy of respect. Maybe the reason that we don't see that from male stars in the same way is because they're not reacting to anything. Britney Spears, for example, is shamed by the press like so much, and then she has songs explicitly about that. Whereas I guess for your sort of like straight, typical male pop star like Justin Timberlake or whatever, there's maybe sort of less to be defiant against.
Oh, definitely. And I mean, this podcast is a Timberlake-free zone, so we'll move right on from him. So this article also depicts your experiences of This Is My Culture, which is a party in Hampstead Heath in London. You know, that point that you're making about it maybe not being the quintessential cruising experience. One thing that definitely stuck out to me was that you heard Evergreen by Will Young blasting out of a speaker.
To be fair, I think it was like a sort of like high energy, like techno remix.
Oh, well, if it's high energy, that changes it completely.
That changes everything. I remember thinking that if I was like really, really like hardcore into cruising and I'd turned up to Hampstead Heath to go cruising, I might have found this event a distraction from that. I saw a lot of people cruising in the general vicinity, but I didn't see much of a crossover between people who are like going to this event and then cruising.
So stepping away from that particular event, do you think you would feel confident if you were to wake up tomorrow and the mood struck you to go cruising on Hampstead Heath on a normal day? Because I think, you know, queer person to queer person in their 20s, I don't think I necessarily would. But if we came from a different generation, I imagine that might be quite commonplace to us.
I've never really going cruising in that sense, I probably would find it quite nerve-wracking. Perhaps that's a generational thing to some extent, but I have a lot of friends my own age or younger who like doing that. Hampstead Heath, actually, I feel like maybe I would feel comfortable going there because the cruising area feels very much its own separate area. It feels like kind of cordoned off. You'd almost be unlikely to just stumble across it by happenstance. If I was cruising, I don't think I would be afraid of other gay men. I mean, perhaps that's naive. I think I'd be more afraid of some homophobic straight guy. Just when you're walking around, the difference between someone looking at you like they want to fuck you and looking at you like they want to kill you, it's like something's quite, it's like a slim and ambiguous. I think like I wouldn't necessarily trust my ability to discern that.
I think one thing that's interesting in what you've just said is that you have friends in their 20s who do actively go cruising. I don't necessarily have that. And conversations that I've had with my queer friends who've definitely been cruised, you know, on the streets or on public transport or whatever, they all seem to have kind of held back from engaging with that encounter. And thinking about myself, I mean, like I said, I haven't gone cruising before. And I think if I were to do so, I can imagine even some of my most sex positive friends not really getting it. So I guess that's maybe not something we have in common. What sort of sentiments have your younger friends that do like cruising shared about the experience?
I think I generally would be too scared to hang around Hagerston Park at night, regardless of whether I was cruising. But what some of my friends have told me is that that sense of risk can be part of the appeal. Some people do like seek risk as part of pleasure, and that sense of adrenaline forms part of the experience. I guess I sort of consider myself too cowardly to partake of that. It wouldn't be a moral judgment, as in, like, oh, why are you going cruising? That's so promiscuous. I think it would actually be framed in a more sort of practical, safety-oriented way. I think that's the objection that will come up.
So bringing it all back to George Michael as we round off this conversation, do you think that if any of the big queer pop stars of today, so whether that's Sam Smith or Ollie Alexander or Lil Nas X, if they got caught in the same sort of scenario by the police, would it be treated the same by the media and the public at large, or would it be viewed completely differently?
It's interesting. I mean, I don't know. I actually feel like that public sex has become quite a contentious topic, even amongst queer left-leaning people, which you see every year in debates around should there be kink at Pride, should people be wearing skimpy outfits at Pride. It's a shame, but I think even from within the queer community itself, I think there'd be quite a censorious reaction from like certain segments of people. I think broadly, I can't imagine it would be as bad as when George Michael got caught doing it. Maybe the difference is it'd also be a lot more vocal defense of it as well.
Well, on the subject of vocal defense, we're just about to hear from Jeff Lavelle. Jeff wrote the article, The Freedom and Beauty I Found in Cruising for Sex, which highlights the connections Jeff made while cruising that he says will stay with him forever. Jeff started out cruising in New York City's Central Park at a very young age, but he continued to engage in this as he moved to LA, where he had some life-changing experiences. The kind of language Jeff uses to describe cruising was something I hadn't seen in any headlines, so I asked him to start by telling me more about his early years of cruising and how he navigated what would become an extremely meaningful part of his queer identity.
I was very young. Like, I was too young probably to be doing that. Nighttime, we would sneak out and go into the park and just cruise guys and have all kinds of adventures and then come home and, like, eat the cookies. That is like the earliest memory I have.
We're talking young if you're saying eating cookies.
Oh, I was like between 15 and 17. Like, okay. I definitely was too young to be doing what I was doing. And I don't think I engaged a lot. I think I watched a lot. But we definitely did engage sometimes, yes. It was a free-for-all in that park. It was hundreds of guys walking around.
You know, in those early years, those early stages and experiences, the protocol, the sort of nuances, you know, how quickly did all that come?
It's a good question. You know, that look back that we do, it all feels so ingrained in me. I do feel like in the beginning, it was like learning a different language. I mean, for me, it was about learning about community, experiencing what I thought at the time it meant to be gay. But I think those early protocols, what are you allowed to do? What can't you do? What does it mean when someone looks at you? It's so integral to who I am that trying to figure out how I learned those things. When I came to LA, I had read this book by this guy, John Recchi, called Numbers, and it talked about how people cruised in Griffith Park. It was scary. I didn't know the neighborhood. I didn't know the rules. I didn't understand any of it. But that fear, to be honest, I think was part of the sexiness of it. I would spend days going for hikes, trying to find where all these guys were going, sort of like stumbling around a lot. And it was really awkward at first. And then I met this guy. He was a Spanish guy. He and his twin brother were porn stars, which I didn't know at the time. And he's like, what are you doing? I was like, oh, I'm just out going for a walk. He's like, me too. Do you want to walk over here? And he took me to this area. And then suddenly it was like, I was in a gay party, because the rules in LA were totally different than the rules in New York. Like in LA, it was so casual and so easy and just so friendly. And in New York, it was kind of still secret. And each were interesting, but I think I liked the casual way better.
Of course, going way back when homosexuality was illegal, cruising in itself was perhaps a lot more dangerous than it is now because there was a lot more at stake. And of course, you know, in certain places, there's still a lot of issues around public nudity and public sex. Right. And there's always that safety factor, which is also present on the apps or whenever you meet anyone, you know, whether that be in a bar or in a public space. Did you ever get yourself into any situations where you thought, oh, actually, this is sort of fringing on the unsafe side now? Because for me, I think that would be what would put me off cruising more than anything else, really.
I mean, I was arrested once, but I don't even care. Like, it's fine. It was total entrapment, and I got released because it was entrapment. My partner and I went. He wanted to see some of the old cruising spots. They don't really exist anymore, though. And now they actually feel creepy. because now when I go, there's like a few guys and they all feel really predatorial and there's none of that community aspect. So I would say that it feels more threatening to me now than it ever did before, because people don't cruise now, at least in places I live. But if I were to go to the middle of the countryside, I think there probably is still cruising, but in places like LA, like, what's the point of cruising anymore? And I think that's true bad in some ways. So I used to live in Silver Lake, which is a neighborhood in the hills in LA, and there was this street that was massively cruisy. And I used to go there, and there were a few times where I did feel like, oh, these kids, they don't belong here. This is not safe. And also, I don't want to be behaving this way in front of you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like,
we literally took over this street at 2 a.m. and fucked in people's front yards. If I found two guys fucking in front of my front yard right now, I would go ballistic. And so in retrospect, it wasn't like we were really behaving well either, but I loved it. I loved it. I loved, there was this place in Griffith Park, guys would barbecue and cook food and go fuck in the bushes. So that kind of thing I miss. And I think sometimes it's hard to find that kind of community right now. And I don't think the apps really offer that. So you kind of had to engage a little bit and you had to make sure you were safe before you went wandering off into the bushes. There was this whole thing you had to do that involved negotiating with somebody else that I don't think you get to do as much on the apps, but it's also why so many of the guys I met became my friends. You had to negotiate that up front. You had to learn the skill that I don't even know how I learned.
One conversation that we've had a lot around the apps is all the blatant sexual racism on there. And I'm wondering if that is a new thing that's come with the apps, or did you see any of that present in cruising back in the day?
So there were places where white guys hung out and places where black guys hung out. And as slowly over time, that starts to go away. And I think in New York and LA, it wasn't as blatant. But like Griffith Park was whiter and Elysian Park was browner. I think it's easier to be racist on an app than it is in person. You know, there's no punishment for that.
Obviously, we're talking about the decline of cruising and ultimately what seems like might be a death for the younger generation of cruising. So before we talk about all the great parts, why do you think that is the case? Is it the rise of the apps, or do you think it goes deeper than just that?
Well, why do we need it anymore? I mean, let's be real. Is it appropriate to take over a whole park? I don't think the death of cruising, quote unquote, is necessarily because something bad happened. I just think something good happened. We're more accepted now. And because we're more accepted, we have to modify our behavior a little bit. We're not fighting for our right in the same way. And I do think that cruising was an outcropping of that. What I find interesting is the way that cruising doesn't happen at bars anymore either. Before the pandemic hit and it all got shut down, I was the door guy at the Eagle here. What fascinated me was how many guys I knew were flirting with me a little bit, and then they would leave the bar, and then an hour later would text me on one of the apps. And it was always just like, you were just right here. And so I do think sometimes the apps have taken away that skill. The first gay bar I went to as a grown-up was this bar called Crow Bar in the East Village. And I went to the East Village because I knew it was going to be dirty. The thing that was interesting was just how easy it was to walk up to somebody and just be like, hey, do you want to go fuck around? You know, and now I feel like if I do that, I might have triggered somebody in some way. I might be being inappropriate. And all those things are true. It's just a different skill set. I don't want to be woofed an hour after I saw you. Like, if you can't come say hi to me, you don't get to fuck me. I think that's a valid rule.
Yeah. Oh, I think we can definitely live by those rules. Yes. But I think, you know, something that's also true in what you said is that the art of conversation in terms of, you know, maybe speaking to each other in that sort of way is kind of dead in certain aspects of the community, which is really sad. So, you know, can we maybe wrap up by you telling me some of the best experiences that you did have cruising? Because you've spoken about friendships. So, you know, what are the things maybe that you think younger generations or older generations that just don't cruise anymore are missing out on?
I loved cruising. I still miss cruising. I wish that I could just sometimes just go walk on those trails and have adventures and make out with random guys. It was kind of fun to be like, I have free from 2 to 4. I'm going to drive up the hill and park my car, and I'm going to go cruise, and I'm probably going to hook up with like 10 guys. But I also did. I made friends. You can't do that on the app. You can't do that at an after-hours sex party, you know? And all those things happen, and all of those things are great. And I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot about myself. I've learned a lot about what I perceived as my limits and then how to confront those limits. And I don't think that's so easy to do in the apps, because on the apps it's so easy to block somebody or move away from somebody. But when you're cruising, you're like, okay, this might not be my type, but let's see what happens when I suck his dick. Worst case is I'm like, oh, I'm not into this. I got to go now. But also I think this idea, I'm not into black guys. I'm not into Asian guys. I'm not into white guys. That's ridiculous. I wasn't into Greek yogurt either. And now I like it. You don't even have to say, I only fuck white guys. You can just block every black guy that comes up on your thing. But in real life, you can't do that. You have to confront your own prejudices in a way that's really uncomfortable. But I think that's one of the things about cruising that was kind of great in a way is, I think as a community, we got to really experience each other, but also just some of my best sex I had while cruising. You know, some of it might be compulsory too. Like, I think I've grown out of whatever sex addiction I might have had, but maybe I did have a little bit and I can own that too. But God, I would love to go down to the New York Sports Club in Chelsea and just hang out in that sauna. Nonstop sex. You know what I mean? It's just nonstop. Cruising just served its time. It served a really, really valuable purpose. And I don't think the tools we have now to serve that purpose, they're not fulfilling the promise I think we were hoping they would. But maybe it's a promise we don't get. If you want everybody to recognize you and acknowledge you, you don't get to go fuck in the bathroom next to the playground.
So while James and Jeff have both acknowledged that they still know or see people who routinely cruise, I think it's fair to say that neither of them have expressed that a surge in the popularity of cruising may be upon us anytime soon. In fact, I think from what we've seen online, most people seem to agree with Jeff's conclusion that cruising has just served its time. Now, of course, that's not to say that cruising is well and truly dead. Something that was such an integral part of queer history can never truly be erased, and even COVID-19 hasn't stopped some people cruising, but it definitely has put another nail in the coffin, with the lasting effects of the pandemic remaining to be seen. As the queer community fights for greater rights and representation, the debate around the necessity of cruising rages on. In October 2020, activist Peter Tatchell branded Southwark Council homophobic over its efforts to stop cruising in Burgess Park in southeast London. Complaints about this cruising to police included cases of sex in daylight near children's play areas. Judging by some of the online replies to Peter Tatchell's tweets, few people agree with him, and many share the views that Jeff seems to have expressed, that it might just be time to move on. But I think we all know there's some people who simply won't, because cruising once was a queer rite of passage, and many feel it should still be honoured as one. Now, if you want to get in touch with Jeff, his website is jefflavelle.com, and he's at Jeff Lavelle on Twitter and at LavelleJeff on Instagram. That's nearly it from me. If you want to get in touch with me directly, I'm at Mr. Rory Boyle on Instagram and on Twitter, and we're at Queer Ear Podcast on Instagram and Twitter as well. All that's left to say is that I've been Rory Boyle, and thank you for getting it in gear, keeping it here, and listening to Queer Ear. Transmission Roundhouse.